Moshe Amsel, welcome to The Law Entrepreneur, and thanks for joining me ahead of today's episode.
Neil, it's my pleasure, absolute pleasure to be here on your show, and thank you so much for having me.
Well, I wanted to get you on for a few minutes to talk about something that's pretty exciting coming up, your next Law Firm Growth Summit. Tell our audience a little bit about it.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm super excited, first of all, because we have an amazing speaker on, and his name is Neil Tyra. So for those of you who don't know who he is, you definitely want to come and check out his session at the Law Firm Growth Summit. But all kidding aside, we have a great lineup, nearly 40 speakers at this event over 3 days, February 9th to 11th. But what I'm more excited about than that is the overall theme of the event. Somebody on a call recently told me that COVID has created this scenario where 2025 came 5 years early for the legal industry. And I love that line because there was an underlying shift in the legal industry already happening, but that got accelerated in the last 9 to 12 months. I can't believe it's already almost 12 months since this all started, but it accelerated this underlying shift in how lawyers do business in all different facets, all different areas. And I think that covering that and understanding that is really going to help people grow their business from here to stay relevant, to continue to be the legal resource in their area, in their specific geography or their specific practice area that they should be, and not become irrelevant. And the perfect example is Blockbuster and Netflix. So Blockbuster is gone. They're out of business. Why are they out of business? Well, the CEO of Blockbuster went to the board and said, hey, there's this company, Netflix, who's doing something really unique and interesting. And they've got these mail-in DVDs. There's no late fees. You just keep it as long as you want. And on top of that, they've got this really cool thing where they stream movies over the internet. We should really look at doing stuff like that. And the board of directors said, no, we're not doing that because 13% of their revenue came from late fees. They weren't willing to look past that loss of revenue to see where the industry was going, to see where the future was going to be. We don't want to be the next Blockbuster of law. We want to be the next Netflix of law. And I think that's really the overarching compelling reason and theme of why you want to attend the Law Firm Growth Summit, because we're going to spend 3 days covering that. And Neil, if it's okay with you, I wanted to jump into just one area where things are changing, and that's marketing.
Let's do that. But before we do that, I just want to kind of bring out one observation I had from last year's summit and why I'm so happy to be a part of it again this year. And that is the production value I thought was off the charts last year. You know, the summits were just kind of coming in vogue and maybe accelerated a little bit as a result of the COVID experience that we're had. But you're pretty ahead of the game right from the get-go in terms of the overall presentation. And I think you're ratcheting that up this session.
Yeah, absolutely. So the first time we ran it, December of 2019, was pre-COVID. And I look like a genius for coming up with a virtual conference before COVID. But the reality is that I had no idea this was coming. And I just saw an opportunity to be different and to provide a resource for people that they didn't have to necessarily leave their homes for. I think now everybody would pay dearly to be able to leave their homes. But the reality is that we're in this environment right now. It's here. It might not be here to stay, but this is the way we need to operate. So we're kind of forced into this situation. So the first time we had over 2,300 law firm owners join us, and we had 31 speakers, and it was a fabulous event. It was a real learning experience. We learned what worked really well. We learned what, you know, maybe we shouldn't do again. And then I looked at the landscape of the industry over the last year, where all physical in-person conferences went virtual. And I started to talk to my customers, and I started to talk to my vendors and to my speakers, and to really try to gauge them and see where they thought the value was. And I found that there's a few interesting things. Number one, people are craving interaction with other people. And a lot of these virtual events are not giving that. Number two, people want to leave having created something that they can implement in their firm rather than leaving with a book full of notes that they're never going to get to. And the last thing is that people just want to have an enjoyable experience that draws them in, that they can, that they're not feeling this fatigue throughout the day that they're in front of the computer, but rather they're moving, they're excited, there's things happening. So my job in creating this event was not just, hey, how do I present this information that is so valuable and so important to have, but how do I present it in a manner where I'm providing all these other things at the same time? And what we did was we chose a technology platform that's going to allow us to do some awesome networking. So every attendee can find another attendee and literally invite them to a video chat right in the platform. So you can literally see a name and say, oh, I haven't seen them. The last time I saw them was at this conference 2 years ago. Click the button. And if they're on, they can accept and you can go straight to a video chat.
Yeah, it's the moral equivalent of meeting them in the hallway for a cup of coffee.
Exactly.
At a conference.
Exactly.
So let's talk about one of the major themes that you hope to expound upon, and that is marketing for law firms.
Yeah, so this is interesting because on my podcast, I went through my predictions for 2021. It's something I started in 2019. I did my predictions for 2020. I have no idea if I was right or wrong. I did a recap 6 months in to say, hey, where were my predictions? But one of the things that I predicted is that where we get our business from is going to change significantly. And the reason is because most attorneys got, at least in the small attorney setting, small law firm setting, most attorneys got the bulk of their business from referrals. And those referrals happen when you're top of mind to other people. And those opportunities come up for somebody to refer you at social gatherings. So somebody's having, you know, their family over for a barbecue or their friends over for a barbecue, and their friend tells them, oh, by the way, you know, my marriage is on the rocks and I think it's over and I think we're getting a divorce. Oh, I've got a great divorce attorney for you. That kind of opportunity to find out what's going on in somebody's life and then present them with the referral is gone because those social gatherings are not happening. Those interactions with other people are not happening. So those opportunities to receive the referral are not there. And I think that we're being trained, whether we like it or not, we're being trained as a consumer to look online for the answer to everything and to look at vendors of any kind and look at their reviews, quantity and quality. So I think that the way we get business is going to change from, hey, my friend referred me, and because he's my friend and he said good things about you, I'm doing business with you no matter what you say your fee is and no matter what your experience is with other people. I'm not going to look into your track record at all. I'm just going to sign up with you because Joe, you know, my friend used you. Now people are looking and saying, okay, what is the outcome I want? Is this lawyer able to give me that outcome? And are there 150 other people who say that they can give me that outcome? So that's just one little sliver of, you know, where I think that marketing is changing fundamentally. And because of that, that changes everything we do. Like where is your focus? What is the primary area of concern when it comes to marketing? It's no longer sending out gifts to 100 people. Not that you shouldn't do that, that you probably still do that, but it's, now I need a process to make sure that I'm getting a review from every client. Now I need to make sure that I'm not 80% of my clients walking out the door happy, but 100% of my clients walk out the door happy. Because if I get one negative review, that can literally cost me hundreds of thousands of dollars of business.
Well, these are all exciting aspects of how the market is changing for the legal industry as a result of what we're all going through. So let's tell our audience, what are the dates again and how can they take advantage of this?
Absolutely. So February 9th to 11th is the event. It's 3 days. And I'm going to encourage anybody who wants to attend, block your calendar, make believe you're flying out of town to go to an event, because we are going to give you an unbelievable experience. You want to go to lawfirmgrowthsummit.com/TLE, lawfirmgrowthsummit.com/TLE, and get your tickets today before it's too late.
All right. Thanks, Moshe. We'll talk to you again soon.
Awesome, Neil. Thank you so much for having me.
Take care.
Did you ever feel like what you learned in law school didn't prepare you for the world of running a law practice? Law school didn't teach us how to start our practices the right way so that we could scale them into a thriving business. We didn't learn how to make sure that our businesses would meet our financial goals and provide the type of lifestyle we deserve. After 10 years, I was fed up with struggling in my practice and decided to begin a journey to scaling a successful practice that would actually allow me to finally live the life I've always dreamed of. I invite you to listen in on the conversations I'm having with some of the most successful solo and small firm practitioners, along with leading business entrepreneurs, and share how I am implementing what I am learning, all with the goal of helping you take control of your practice and your life. This is The Law Entrepreneur. Hey there, fellow law entrepreneurs. Welcome to episode 250. Yep, you got that right. 250 of The Law Entrepreneur. I'm Neil Tyree, your host as usual. Today, my guest is Suraj Vyas. And Suraj is an attorney here locally in the Washington, D.C. area, although probably a little closer to Baltimore, who focuses primarily on construction law and contract law, although he does do quite a bit in some other practice areas, as you'll hear. So he has a pretty broad breadth of practice areas and involvement. So you could say it was something of a general practice. We talk about the pros and cons of that a little bit. And now he's adding patent law, having passed the patent law exam. So he's adding that to his bag of tricks. And we're going to talk about how he leveraged his engineering and science background into a practice that focused primarily on helping in the construction industry. And now, as I said, with patent law. So it's really interesting conversation. I hope you enjoy it as much as I did in having it. And so without any further delay, here is Suraj Vyas. Suraj Vyas, welcome to The Law Entrepreneur.
Thank you so much for having me, Neil.
Well, I'm thrilled to be here. I'm thrilled to have you here. Tell our audience a little bit about yourself and how you came to be where you are today.
Sure. So I'm actually a K through JD. So as soon as I got my JD, I kind of sat for the bar, passed the bar, and then started my firm up shortly thereafter. I run a general law practice with a focus on construction law as well as contract law, and hopefully patent law soon enough.
Oh, you're going to add another feather to your cap?
Yep. Think so.
Interesting. So when you say you're a general firm, you know, there's a school of thought that says that's a little ambitious, or maybe it's not niched enough, or, you know, it's a mile wide and an inch deep. How do you reconcile all of that in your own practice?
So I think it was just kind of based on the circumstances I was put in when I started the firm. I can actually get a little bit into that history, I guess, right now.
Sure.
Is I was actually working as an in-house counsel to an engineering firm right after I graduated and passed the bar. And so I was actually approached by a friend of mine who needed some help with a construction firm he was working with. And because I served as in-house counsel, I wasn't able to be his attorney. And so, you know, I did just speak with him a little bit about his issue, and I did realize I knew exactly how to help. And so I told him to give me until the end of the week and I'd work something out. So I did some quick Google searches. I drove down to the SDAT in Baltimore and just put together a firm. And I always wanted to have my own law firm where I could, you know, supposedly set my own hours. But I didn't anticipate doing it so soon. I didn't think it all the way through, perhaps. I didn't see the big picture in terms of what was going to come after that initial client. And so I really decided, okay, I'm going to take in basically every case that walks through the proverbial door.
Right.
And so even on my website, I kind of drafted in such a way where, okay, let's get hits, let's get people coming to my website and know I'm out there. And I'll just take whatever I can get at this point because I really am brand new and I don't know what the future really holds for me.
Yeah, you know, and I think that's a reasonable approach. You know, you hear a lot of coaches and seasoned attorneys who will argue that as a solo or small firm practitioner, you have to be more narrow in your practice, and that the idea of a general practitioner, as we used to have a lot of back in the day, has gone out the window. But I think the reality of the situation is when you first open a practice, sometimes you really don't know what practice area is going to suit you best. And so
you know, sampling a few cases, nothing too crazy that would be too far over your head to handle, but kind of exploring things a little bit and then determining where you're going to focus is an approach. And that seems like that's what you've done.
Definitely. So I think, you know, in this new year of 2021, I think I'm definitely going to have a much larger focus on these three main areas of construction, contracts, and patent.
So with that first case, your buddy approached you on, was that so enticing that to cause you to say, hey, in-house counsel job, I'm taking a hike? Or was it just the proverbial push off the end of the gangplank?
So I did always want my own firm. I just didn't think it was going to happen so soon. And I think it was a question of, can I really help this person? I was very good friends with him. I worked with him a lot in previous internships that I had actually in India. And so I think this was just the thing I needed to really push me off the edge. And I figured I could help him. And it was a sizable case. So I was fortunate to get a good cushion, I guess, to hold on to.
Yeah, well, that helps. I mean, you wouldn't want to take that giant leap of faith on a minor traffic accident case.
Right, of course.
Right, exactly. So that was interesting. Now, did you have an engineering background to start with?
So I do have an engineering background. I actually went to undergrad at University of Maryland, Baltimore County. I started off in their engineering program and actually quickly realized I wanted to move into their interdisciplinary studies program. I found that a mix of engineering and law was something I was more looking for at the time. When I was interning at engineering firms, just, you know, over summers growing up, I realized that the law was considered in essentially each and every meeting that these contractors or managers or engineers were having. It really became a question of, can we do this? Is this legal? What sort of trouble are we going to get into? And so they're really intertwined. And so I found that in college, I wanted to come at law and engineering together. And so what happened after that was got the degree in interdisciplinary studies and worked at an engineering firm for a little bit. But what I noticed once I started the firm was that my engineering knowledge wasn't necessarily communicated to my clients perfectly. And so what I decided to do was sit for the fundamentals of engineering exam, just to kind of, I guess, prove to myself as well as potential clients that, yes, I am the real deal. I understand engineering just as well as I understand law.
Interesting. Tell me a little bit about that exam and what goes into it.
Sure. So the fundamentals of engineering exam is a board exam, and it just tests you on the fundamentals of engineering, essentially. You're using different engineering formulas, whether it's things related to the mechanics of materials or things related to hydraulics or a number of other topics. You have different disciplines of engineering. And so I actually took the environmental engineering one. I have a background in environmental engineering as well as civil engineering. And so I figured I'd sit for the environmental one. It's a little bit easier, actually, and wanted to pass that to really put that credential on my site as well as on myself.
Wow, that's fascinating. I had no idea that there was a certification level that you could do in that regard.
Yep, definitely. So there's a couple different levels as well. The topmost is called a professional engineer.
And, sure.
You know, they have their own code of ethics, own regulations they need to follow and so on.
Well, and right. And I think, you know, that's kind of what I intuitively understood. But to know that there's a basics of engineering or fundamentals of engineering certification that you can get to enhance your, you know, credentials, that's something new for me. I never knew that.
Yep. And actually, so when I sat for the patent bar late 2020, one of the requirements is actually you need a degree in engineering, or if you don't have a formal degree that they recognize from their list, which I didn't because I ended up doing interdisciplinary studies, another option was actually you could show them that you had an EIT certification, which you get upon passing the FE. And so that was kind of another thing pushing me to take that FE exam because I did need to do it in order to sit for the patent bar.
Interesting. And so tell me about how the adding you know, patent law will enhance your practice?
Sure. So I've always been interested in the idea of patent law, even just growing up and even in high school, I guess, when Shark Tank really took off on ABC. I was an avid watcher of that, still am. And, you know, they're always talking about, we have these provisional patents or we have a design patent on this and so on. And I was like, man, I love all the inventions that are coming in through this show. And, you know, what is a patent exactly? How does that work? What is it protecting? And then I did learn late in law school, I think, that, you know, it's really advantageous to have an engineering degree because it allows you to sit for the patent bar. And I kind of thought to myself, okay, well, I have that background in engineering. I didn't know that was kind of a cutoff field where you needed some sort of science background. And so it kind of just went hand in hand and it felt like it was the right thing to do at the time. So I went for it, passed it, and hoping to start that up soon.
Interesting. So once you pass the exam, I guess there's an admission ceremony before you can say you're a member of the patent bar?
Yep. So just kind of application similar to the bar application of any other state, Maryland or DC. And, you know, it's just a matter of waiting. They take a little bit of time over there at the patent office, but it looks like.
So sometime in the new year, you're expecting that to take place.
Yep.
Interesting. So then tell us a little bit about your practice. So now you said you focus basically on, to some degree, on construction and construction law, adding patent law here in the new year. But you also have experience in a wide variety of other practice areas. So tell us a little bit how your practice is set up. Are you virtual, or do you have a brick and mortar kind of situation, or a combination of both? And how that's been impacted by the pandemic, frankly.
Sure. So the bulk of my business actually comes from arbitration and acting as a consultant to a few different construction companies, both before they actually run into trouble and then, of course, after an issue has arisen and they need someone to come in and advise on what to do next. But when I was first starting out, I had decent income coming in from that first big case. And so I was actually thinking about getting one of the new office suites that they were building back in 2018 near the Howard County Courthouse in Ellicott City, Maryland. Until then, I basically met clients at coffee shops and worked from home. And for most of the work I was handling, people just didn't want to schedule a time to meet in person anyways, since I was mostly working with businesses and construction firms. So they would, in fact, prefer email or, you know, at most a video call, honestly.
Right.
And so as more and more months passed, I kind of just realized I didn't need the office space. And I was actually planning to wave into DC since I know back then you just had to take the MPRE if you had a high enough score on the MBE in Maryland. And so I figured maybe if I needed an office, I'll just get one in DC. And so there was actually a government shutdown around, I believe, 2018 it was.
Yeah, the end of the year, right.
Yeah. And so there was some backlog with the DC bar, and so I didn't actually get admitted until the fall of 2019. And so I was pretty used to not having an office at that time. And I mean, of course, there are situations where you would like to have an office, but it was never anything impossible for me to handle.
Yeah, in my sense with construction companies, depending on their size, most of them do their own business at, you know, coffee shops and, you know, sandwich shops and you know, on the back of the hood of the car kind of thing.
Yeah, so it really depends. I think for a lot of the smaller subcontractors, that's certainly the case. Some of the larger general contractors are definitely, they're more used to, you know, Microsoft team meetings or something like that.
Right.
And then, And so as far as kind of the smaller or more individual clients, I guess, in the other practice areas, if they needed to meet in person, I was fortunate enough where the DC bar actually got their building renovated shortly after I became a member. And so they allowed attorneys to use rooms to meet with clients. You just book a room and it came with everything you basically needed. A coffee machine, secretary, everything a quote unquote real law firm would have, I guess.
Today's episode of The Law Entrepreneur is brought to you by my friends at Spotlight Branding. For many years, marketing companies have focused on funnels that run for a short time, often leaving dozens of leads behind that didn't make a decision yet. Spotlight Branding has found a better way. It's called a content loop, and it's changing the way attorneys think about their marketing. This system nurtures your leads in perpetuity with quality evergreen content that elevates your credibility and helps the rest of your marketing actually work. If you're interested in learning more, head over to spotlightbranding.com/TLE, as in the law entrepreneur, to learn more about the content loop and how it can revolutionize your law firm's marketing. Spotlight Branding, more referrals, better clients, higher return on investment. Now, if you've been a listener of this podcast for any time, you know that I sing the praises of Ruby all the time because they're really responsible in my own practice for helping me grow my business, deliver personalized experience to my clients. You know, building customer loyalty, really, in terms of having a consistent front-facing office partner in Ruby, and allows me to stay connected anywhere, anytime to my business through their services. So I can't say enough about Ruby. I'm delighted to have them and continue to have them as a sponsor of this podcast. And this episode of The Law Entrepreneur is sponsored by Daylight, the all-in-one contact relationship manager, or CRM. I've been using Daylight for well over 10 years now, and it's the best CRM for business on the Mac and iPhone. And despite having a case management platform that I'm very happy with, I still use Daylight to handle all of my many other law firm needs. When you're running your own law firm, it can be difficult to stay on top of follow-ups, keep track of details and communication, and stay aware of what needs to be done next on each project. Daylight organizes everything in one place, so you don't have to rely on your memory to keep it all straight. If you're feeling like it's time to upgrade from spreadsheets to a CRM, check out Daylight. You can download it from the App Store or visit www.marketcircle.com and try it free for 30 days. On top of that, you can get your first month free when you tell them you heard about Daylight here on The Law Entrepreneur. Daylight by Market Circle, staying top of mind without the stress. There's a lot of those free resources that, you know, I'm sure all of our companion solo and small firm practitioners are either aware of or take advantage of. So you have meeting rooms at the bar associations where you can meet clients. You have meeting rooms at the courthouses frequently. I know. Yep. Here in Montgomery County, you can book them through the law library. And frankly, most of the deposition companies have meeting rooms that you can use. In many cases, they don't charge you for it because they're really hoping that you'll book them for your deposition. So I know I used to do a lot of meetings in rooms, the deposition company suite downtown. So there's a lot of those resources.
Right, and that makes a lot of sense. I know the DC bar building has definitely been shut down since the pandemic. That hasn't been too big of an issue just because most businesses have been working remotely anyway. So everyone's kind of become used to that,
right,
for better or worse.
Right. Anyway, so tell us a little bit about how you go about marketing a firm such as yours.
Sure. So marketing, luckily, is actually one of the easier parts of my firm.
Really? That's usually the biggest challenge for most.
So it's a little odd to say, but I was actually hoping it would be more challenging. I'm on the younger side of attorneys, and so I was kind of ready.
Now you're just killing me there. Suraj.
Yeah, I don't want to come off a little bit arrogant, right, but I guess I just mean to say that it would have been a little more interesting to see more of my creative side come out and see where that might have led. But so I'm on the younger side of attorneys, and so I was kind of really ready to brand the heck out of my law firm. So I went to India, got some super nice quality business cards, great branded pens and pencils, notepads, stickers, you know, you name it.
Right.
I got the same handles on every social media under the sun, even random defunct ones. And, you know, I was kind of ready to go viral, I guess. And it turns out the construction industry is actually just much, much older than I probably envisioned. And so they aren't really looking for that kind of viral marketing. They're looking for people who have experience and who are vetted by another person or company that they trust. And so it really went back to leveraging the contacts I already had from internships and just working in the construction industry. And so most of my business just comes from word of mouth, honestly. I guess the SEO is fine on my website because people seem to find me organically through Google. I haven't spent any money on advertising, so I'm not too sure about what advice I could provide there. But
well, I think it's interesting because, you know, there's a lot of us that think we have to do exactly what you were talking about. Get all the swag, get all the social media contacts, get ready to go viral, and sometimes ignore the fact that referral marketing is still the lifeblood of most, you know, law firms. And some industries, as you said, are lend themselves more to that than others. You know, I have a buddy that's a construction company, and I'm always bugging him about, you know, when are you going to do some social media marketing and get your name out there? And he's like, I don't really need to do that because I've got people that I've worked with for years, subcontractors and other general contractors. We all know each other. We all bid on the same jobs.
Yep.
And, you know, I have all those relationships already built. And I think that's what you're saying.
Definitely. I think loyalty goes really far in the construction industry. And, you know, even though a few minutes ago I was kind of bemoaning that I haven't gotten the chance to, you know, be as creative as I wished, I should definitely, you know, thank my lucky stars that I'm in kind of an area of law where loyalty is extremely rewarded.
Yeah, because you'll hear a construction guy say, like, my roofer. He doesn't say, my collection of roofing contractors.
Exactly.
They always say, my roofer. They have one until they don't, and then they find another one.
Definitely. And, you know, I think it's something I just can't let go of, though, because I did recently just order some bags from India with my brand on them. Howard County's no longer using plastic bags, so there's still part of me kind of ready to dive into, I guess, social media or that kind of marketing side with my business.
Yeah, well, you may be able to leverage that, you know, if we get back to the point where we're having larger group gatherings, you know, some of those that cater to the construction industry might be something you want to, you know, be able to take a look at.
That's definitely a great idea.
Yeah. So how are you staffed? Is it just you? Are you a true solo? And if so, do you use virtual assistants or contract attorneys or other types of resources?
So it's just me. I do work with other attorneys from time to time on certain cases. So since I have kind of that general law practice set up right now, I definitely get calls coming in all the time where I just don't feel like I'm equipped to handle that. And so I'm always happy to co-counsel, I guess, if it's an area that I don't usually practice in as much. But I also, more than the website, I guess, word of mouth really is the king right here. And I guess the contacts I have, they call me up. They're like, oh, you're an attorney. You can handle this case, right? And it's just the reality of the situation is I can't handle those cases because I have no idea what that sort of deals with, I guess.
Sure.
And so it usually ends up me referring them out or co-counseling. If a lot of times the community I work with a lot are Indian clients in terms of individuals. And I've noticed they definitely have a preference to work with another Indian, whether it's an issue of, I guess, a language barrier, or they just feel more comfortable. I think it's mostly the language and kind of culture they feel comfortable with. They want to make sure they work with someone they're comfortable with.
Yeah. Well, I think that's true for everybody in any practice area.
Right.
You have to be comfortable with who you're working with. And sometimes that means, you know, you're making those decisions based on who looks and sounds like you. And I don't find that to be a problem at all. Let me, you know, you touched on something that I don't think we discuss a lot here, and that's co-counseling. You know, it typically falls when you get a new case, can I take it or do I need to refer it out?
Right.
And it's ironic that you bring that up, because I was just thinking about a co-counseling opportunity myself, where it's on the fringe of something that I do, but not exactly what I do. Mm-hmm. But I'd kind of like to try a little bit of this. And so co-counseling makes a perfect solution. How do you frame that? How do you set that up?
Sure. So I actually just have like a Excel sheet on my computer where I keep attorneys' names in them, what kind of area of law they practice. And so if I need to refer to that in the future, it's just a handy little tool I have. Sure. For referrals or co-counseling. And so I reference that from time to time and, you know, see who I haven't reached out to in a while. It's always good to keep those connections going as well.
Absolutely.
And so what happens is sometimes they're available and I can do it through them, or sometimes I'm also part of a few different Facebook groups that are specifically directed towards attorneys. And so those are a great source of referrals as well as co-counseling opportunities. I'll just put up a little post on there, give a brief synopsis of the issue that I heard from a client, and if someone's ready to take it on, I'll either hand it off to them, or if I feel like maybe I can bring some value, or if the client really has some sort of history with me, maybe they want me on board, and then we'll set up a co-counseling relationship.
And how do you formalize that?
So it's usually just a contract between the two parties, fairly simple, as well as the client. You want to make sure the fee agreement is extremely clear. You want to make sure you're not, at least I don't charge anything extra, because I know in Maryland as well as DC, that's absolutely not allowed by the bar associations. And so you just want to make sure your agreements are extremely clear on what services you're providing, what sort of work each counsel is going to perform, and that the client understands exactly who their attorney is and who they need to communicate with. It's really just a matter of being as clear as possible. You don't want any sort of ambiguity in that fee agreement.
And how they're going to be billed.
Right.
Yeah,
so, right. And that's something I usually work with, I guess, the same set of people. And so we kind of have that set up whether, okay, this kind of case, we'll do a flat fee and we'll split it this way, or it'll be an hourly thing or a contingency. It really depends on the type of case.
Sure. Talk a little bit about the technology that you use that helps support your practice.
Sure. So I love technology, and I actually wish it played a little bit more of a role in my business. I always love the idea of if this, then that, and Zapier, and things like that. But I actually don't find myself needing to use them as often as I would want to, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Sometimes that shiny object just doesn't really fit in your workflow.
Right. So, I mean, the backbone of my company is honestly just Office and G Suite. Or now Google Workspace. And so I have a ton of other services for smaller things and extremely specific clients, like Harvest for invoicing certain long-term clients, or Zoho Bookings for certain other types of clients. And, you know, now I have a bevy of video calling softwares on my laptop, just because different construction companies I work with prefer different software.
Right.
Most of them stick with Zoom or Microsoft Teams or Cisco WebEx, but there's definitely a ton of them out there.
Absolutely. And how about a practice management system do you use?
I dabble in HubSpot, but I don't, again, it's something where I don't think I utilize it as much as I should, or I don't think I'm using it to the fullest extent. It's honestly, my Google Calendar is so crucial to the success of my business, my time management, and just making sure I even leave time in my life for non-work things. I'm definitely obsessed with my Google Calendar.
And how about for task management? What do you use for your, you know, personal and professional task management?
So I tried using Trello for a little while. Yep. I still do from time to time. But again, it's really just that Google Calendar. I organize it absurdly. Any of my friends would tell you how obsessed I am with it. The color coding, the time slots, the different accounts. It's a little bit nutty.
Well, lots of people make perfect use of those kinds of tools. What can you think of? An event or a action that you took that was crucial to your success, and then maybe one that didn't turn out as well as you had hoped.
Sure. So, I think one of the things that worked out really well was just being open and honest with people and really connecting with them. I think networking is absolutely, absolutely still the lifeblood of this business. And, you know, as we just talked about, there's lots of fancy tools out there, lots of fancy SEO companies, but it's really just, who do you know? And do you actually connect with them on a real level besides, hey, here's my card, or hey, I'm just talking to you because I really want a referral in the future. It's, can you make that real human connection with someone? And then aside from that, I guess, just back to that organization, you know, I never was the most organized person, but I think towards the tail end of college, beginning of law school, I realized everything just works better when they are organized. So I went from color coding my closet in college to color coding my calendar at the law firm, I guess.
Good analogy there. And how about something that didn't work out as well as you had hoped?
Sure. So I think one of the biggest areas of improvement I definitely need to do is, so I actually wanted to start accepting payments via credit card during the pandemic. So again, kind of being, I guess, on the younger side of things, I looked actually first towards Venmo or PayPal, Google Pay, Apple Pay, any of the companies with pay. And I was really freaked out at the idea of commingling funds and just anything that would lead to issues with the bar, because that has been hammered in at law school that do not mess with the bar, you will lose your license. So
as well, that's always,
yep. And so that's always something I'm looking at. So I opted to go with a more legal friendly credit card company, and I was all set to go with the company, but they pulled out at the last second and they were being a little bit sketchy as to why they couldn't get it up and running exactly. It's a known company that has users I personally know, but it's probably not the number one company that we know most attorneys use.
Yeah.
But I was attracted to them because they didn't require any monthly payments. And the construction firms or companies that typically hire me, they send out checks and they have no problem doing it. And so I was really only looking at credit cards for those one or two random cases that I take on that are out of the construction or contract field. And so I actually still don't accept credit cards. And frankly, I think that's, you know, borderline unacceptable at this point. So it's definitely something easily solvable, I think, if I just go with, you know, LawPay as an example. But I guess I just haven't had the push to really do it yet.
Well, I think I think it's a matter of volume. And again, your basic customer base, because like you said, you know, construction companies are still writing checks left and right.
Yep.
Construction companies haven't got to the point where they're using Venmo and PayPal and the like. So as long as they're doing paper checks, you got to do what they do. I mean, you have to be able to accept what they're writing, you know, what they're doing. So I think that's fine. When there comes a time when you have enough people asking you about credit card processing, you know, then you can make that decision. But until then, you know, maybe it's premature.
Right. I think that's definitely a good point. You know, maybe when this patent law branch kind of picks up, that might be the push I need.
That may be different. Yeah, it may change the mix of the base such that it makes more sense to do that. And if that happens, I definitely would suggest LawPay.
Right.
You know, I use them. They're endorsed by our bar, and you know, you can't go wrong. There are some issues with LawPay, you know, in terms of the cost for some, but to me, it's the cost of peace of mind. You know,
I think you're 100% correct. I think that's what it is.
I know it's handled properly, and you know, they've been guests on the show before, and I'm a client. I love them. But so, you know, if you get to that point, that would be my recommendation. Well, listen, Suraj, it's been great having a chance to meet you and chat with you. Tell our audience a little how they can reach out to you if they want to follow up and particularly learn about how you're approaching construction law and the integration of the patent law practice.
Sure thing, Neil. Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it. Big fan of the show. So this is definitely kind of a little dream come true, actually.
That's very kind of you to say.
But your audience can definitely find my firm at Sav Law Firm. That's S-A-V Law Firm on essentially any social media. Like I said, we're on everything. Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Twitch, LinkedIn, Snapchat. You name it, we're probably there. If we're not, let me know so I can grab that branding before someone else scoops it up.
All right. I'm going to look for you on TikTok. Okay.
And you can connect with me directly on LinkedIn or email me at svyas, that's S-V-Y-A-S, at savlawfirm.com.
Perfect. All right, Swaj, thank you so much for joining us today on Law Entrepreneur. I look forward to when this pandemic thing is over, maybe us getting together and and having a cup of coffee ourselves.
Absolutely. I'd love that, Neil. Thanks.
Thanks so much. Well, there you have it, Law Entrepreneurs. Thanks for being with us today and with this episode of The Law Entrepreneur. I want to thank our sponsors, as usual, Ruby Receptionists, Daylight, and Spotlight Branding. Make sure you swing on by our website at thelawentrepreneur.com or visit our Facebook page or Twitter account. You can find us anywhere by just searching on The Law Entrepreneur. Also, if you'd be kind enough, I'd love it if you could go to your podcast application and leave us a rating and a review. It helps with our visibility and it helps ensure that we're there to be found when people come looking for podcasts in the legal space. So once again, thanks for being a part of today's episode of The Law Entrepreneur.